Bill Show wish to thank our primary sponsors. The Mallon Agency, located in Springfield, PA, where they take pride in exceeding expectations every time. Anthony DiCecco and our friends at Tennis Addiction are ready to serve all your tennis needs at their beautiful facility in Exton, PA. Everyone to the Rosie and Bill Show. I think most rock music fans would agree with me when I say that Whitesnake, Night Ranger, Revolution Saints, they're all great bands. And you know what? Our guest this week has played for all of them. But that's not all. He's also played for the Turtles, with Cher, and Trans-Siberian Orchestra, just to name a few. Please welcome to the Rosie and Bill Show one of the most talented, hardest working, and flat out nicest guys in the music business today, Joel Hoekstra. Joel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you. We're so happy to have you here, Joel, with us. And I have to say, before we get started, I had a tip for you for your website. There's a lot of bands listed that you've worked with and played with over the years. I think it might be quicker or shorter to list the people you haven't played with than the people you have lent your talent to.
Yeah, I mean, I try to list people that I've had the opportunity just to even jam with for a song or something on there. So it's kind of a comprehensive list. I try to put the people that I've spent the most time with up at the top. So it's, you know, fairly represented. So you can kind of gather that. But, you know, I like that being on there just for history's sake of like people that I've been able to get on stage with and play a song with here or there, just because it makes for a fun story.
Definitely. I mean, he's just giving you a hard time because it's so impressive, you know. And the other thing that's really impressive besides your resume is your mastery of the fretboard. I mean, we were watching some of your videos and it's mind blowing. It's like you move so fast and it's pristine. It's very specific and crisp and it's amazing. When did this musical journey start for you? I know you talk about it a lot in your interviews, but for our viewers, tell us how you got started.
Yeah, I mean, my parents are classical musicians, so they started me out on cello and piano at a young age. And then basically AC/DC Back in Black came out when I was about 11 and heard them and saw them on the early days of MTV and decided I wanted to be Angus Young. And went to my parents and asked for a guitar. So yeah, seventh grade, I believe I was 11 at the time when I started up. So yeah, in a lot of ways, that was like the last career decision I actually had to make, a major one in terms of what I was going to do with my life. So got lucky with that.
Watching your videos, you really do make it look so easy and seamless. And Bill pointed out, you know, every now and then he comes up, he's got this grin on his face, but you're doing all this crazy stuff with your fingers. And how long did it take you to get to that point where you were that comfortable, where you could be doing that kind of intricate work and just be so relaxed, or make it look like you're so relaxed?
That's a hard one to answer. I mean, you know, improvement on a musical instrument is just kind of like any other major endeavor, like learning a foreign language. So it's like asking somebody when they were fluent in that language, you know, and there's no definitive answer to that timeline. You just kind of gradually improve. I still feel like I'm improving as I listen back to even stuff I did 10 years ago. I'm like, ugh, you know. So you know, that's what happens when you spend a lot of time with it and just kind of do it on a daily basis. And you end up looking back and going, I think I've gotten better since then. So, you know, there's no point of arrival.
Got you.
It's amazing, Joel, how some of the other musicians who are really just incredible at their craft have all said similar things. It's just a constant evolution, and the possibilities for what you can do and how good you can get are really infinite, regardless of your instrument, if you just keep working at it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I try to break that down to a daily thing more than thinking about like where I want to be in 10 years. It's more like, did I work hard today? So that's just kind of the way it works out. Eventually, if you just kind of keep doing productive things on a daily basis with music, it tends to work out.
You know, Joel, I loved what I heard you say in an interview where you talked about when you were learning, that the thing that inspired you to really work harder was working on music that you actually liked. Is that the advice that you would give to aspiring musicians?
That was actually something that I would say is good when you want to get somebody hooked, like in the beginning. I would say from there, it's more important to be open-minded. That's the way I've kind of looked at things. And sometimes things don't work out exactly like you pictured them, but they work out. So sometimes people have too narrow a focus of what they want to do. And my advice is like, say yes to everything and just make sure that you're constantly working. And then certain things are going to stick and certain things are going to not. And in the end, the things that stick are the things that you remember, and you just kind of keep moving forward with those. So, you know, that's been the way I've approached things. And that's why I've done things all the way from, you know, when you're talking about, you threw the Turtles in there, which is kind of funny, but a lot of people wouldn't know that the guitar player in Whitesnake had a background in playing with oldies bands and things like that. But, you know, the Turtles and Cher and, being on Broadway with Rock of Ages, those are all things that I never would have seen when I was a kid learning hard rock stuff. And a lot of the stuff that did work out as well, the Night Ranger and Whitesnake and even Trans-Siberian Orchestra, those are things that maybe you'd go, yeah, all right, that makes sense. But some of the other stuff is kind of like just from remaining open-minded and playing everything you can have the opportunity to do and making the best of it. So that's pretty much the way I approach everything on a daily basis, even today still.
One of the things, Joel, that is so impressive, and I'm just going to kind of build off of what you just said, is you're open-minded, you've done all these different things, but unlike a lot of people who will do things kind of in a chronological order, one of the most fascinating things I think about your career is that you've done many of these things simultaneously and played in different ways and in different venues and different bands and different things at the same time. I mean, that to me just shows that you're not just talking, you're walking the walk, you know, in terms of being open-minded and really spreading yourself out and exploring different and new things. And then, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that helped create maybe some new and additional things above and beyond what you were doing.
Yeah, always. I mean, you can trace every gig that's there back to certain factors that came into play to create that. And a lot of times the root of it makes no financial sense when you go like, man, I was doing that for this. And, you know, like Broadway's the Rock of Ages show, that really came from subbing in the pits, like doing like pit work here in New York on like traditional Broadway shows. And that was stuff that I was like subbing for my friend. And I just kind of thought, well, it'll be good for me. You know, it's reading music, and that's something I don't have to do in a lot of the bands I'm in. So I'll do it and just it'll improve me. But like if I broke down what I made per the amount of time I put in versus the money that came in, I was probably making, you know, 10 cents an hour or something crazy. So you know, you have to invest in things like that. And, you know, I think just in the end, those are the things that kind of pay off. And that's why I just go, hey, it's more important that you're working more so than like some gigs are going to, you know, pay the bills and pay money. And certain things are going to be investments in your future for the gigs that pay money and come around. So like my reward from that was getting Rock of Ages and playing essentially the same show for over six years. So then it, you know, having that open up and having it come to something that was like, well, now I have to learn very little. I can just kind of show up and play the same thing every day and, you know, make a good living doing so. that's where it pays off. And really everything has that behind it. The entire, every single gig I have has some kind of story like that, where you break it down to like the root of it. And it's like, why were you even doing that? You know?
Well, you're right though. You never know what opportunity is going to come knocking, and work begets work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I can't help but think that that open mind that you talked about earlier also plays a big part in this, because going down there in the pit and doing some of these things, if you're not taking those initial steps, the ones following don't happen.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, very similar was playing with Jim Peterick's World Stage Band. And that was something that was a great break for me when I was in the local Chicago scene. But when I had moved to New York and I was playing in Love Janis, which was a theater show about Janis Joplin, that was already 8 shows a week. And I was already working really hard, but Jim would fly me back to still be a part of his house band for those, which was like, you know, learn 36 songs. And I'd have to work on those for like weeks leading into the one day I was going to play them. But then Night Rangers drummer Kelly Kagi was a part of those pretty much those once a year, every year. And so that was really what led to me eventually getting an opportunity to play with Night Rangers. So very similar situation where if I looked at like, well, what are the hours I put in on that gig and what was the payoff? But I think I just having the attitude of always working and, you know, like you said, work creates work. Or
right.
I think you, yeah. Definitely. So the more you can kind of keep yourself active and out there and doing things in the music world and in any capacity, then it just kind of creates other opportunities.
Do you find it difficult, Joel, to keep balance in your life when you have that much going on? I mean, it sounds like you really didn't have much time to sleep.
You just use the spare time to do it. I mean, it's still like that. And in particular, the top of this year is like that for me right now, where I'm kind of not only teaching virtually while I'm home and carrying a roster. I think I have 25, 26 students right now a week. And then currently I'm getting the music ready for the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp that's coming up, and practicing a little bit of Accept because I'm going to be touring with them, and also writing my next album. So those three things kind of fit around a teaching day, and you just kind of break them down into increments and go, all right, I'm going to practice this from this time to this time, and teach the lessons, practice this from here to here, and practice that from there to there. So
yeah. You don't watch a lot of TV, do you?
No, not so much. I have a little time at the end every night where I wind down, and that's pretty much it. So usually at about midnight, I go, okay, my day's done.
Well, Joel, I can't help but think that in addition to teaching guitar and teaching music, you could probably teach some courses in time management.
You know, I was just saying earlier today, I'm not great. Like I kind of despise the scheduling thing. I wish somebody would just be like, here's your schedule and give it to me. And great. Okay, cool. Half of the battle is like making sure I have everything down and everything's organized. And so I'm not particularly great with that. Like, you know, I just kind of have a thing on my desktop that shows the year. And then I kind of just keep plugging stuff in as I get it, including interviews and things like this that are just listed, and just keep checking it off. And then I kind of leave everything, and then the old dates go and I create the next year. And so I have those on my laptop from quite some time back. It's fun occasionally to go through, open up, like, you know, what was happening 10 years ago, et cetera.
Yeah. And to see kind of the progression of your life. But, you know, there's a reason that people who are working all the time or famous or whatever have personal assistants. I know we tend to make fun of it, like, oh, they're full of themselves, they have a personal assistant, but there's a reason. It is a lot to handle, right?
I mean, there are times I've said the words, like I could almost use a, you know, I hate to say it, but yes, personal assistant. And then there are times where I go, no, I got it. And, you know, I do have people that I think of when it comes to certain things that are, you know, people that are willing to help out and ask them like for favors and pay, but it's not full-time assistants per se.
One thing I wanted to just throw out there was, you know, kudos to you for this. And Rosie and I, we're fortunate enough to where we have a lot of relationships with some management firms and public relations firms, and we're constantly in communication with them about their clients and coming on our show. But in your case, we reached out to you and you responded very quickly, And so you were right on top of it. And we coordinated this in one or two communications. And sometimes people, it takes days or weeks for people to get back to us. You were right on top of it. So I can't help but think that's just a reflection of everything else that you're doing as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely helped with Whitesnake. I know that I was right on that and was the first person to kind of hit them up and the first person to get an audition. And so that, I think, definitely helped. Sometimes the early bird does indeed get the worm. Maybe not every time, but, you know, time to time that does hold true.
Joel, you just mentioned the audition for Whitesnake. A couple of thoughts about that. First of all, do you get nervous?
And always.
You think you have a lot of confidence. Like, what helps you to get through those things?
I guess desperation, I say jokingly, but like also not jokingly. Like, you know, the music business is hard. So you kind of just, you have to launch yourself after everything all the time and try for things. And then I guess at a certain point I go like, all right, I've had some success, and that can also be motivating because it's like, well, let's just see how far it can go. Because for my background and where I came from, I would say that, you know, most of the things that have happened for me, you wouldn't really say like, oh yeah, that's going to, you know, most people around me when I was a kid would have been like, no way, you know, and myself included. So to a degree, I'm playing with house money, so to speak, because it's like, all right, things have worked out, but I just, now I want to see how far it can go.
Are your parents excited that you went this direction, or were they hoping you would go classical?
They probably would have preferred classical, but like, I think that they're both, you know, my father passed away, but I think they're both, you know, like, you know, enthusiastic and proud of the, you know, what's happened. But they probably, you know, they're being two classical musicians having kids, they were probably hoping they'd breed like a classical prodigy, I'm sure. So.
Joel, I'm curious, speaking in terms of music and training and going back a little bit, you attended the Guitar Institute of Technology, right? So what did that mean for you in your career? What was that experience like?
So I had taken lessons from a guy who'd graduated from there locally, and he was teaching me a lot of the curriculum already. Sorry, a little tongue tie there. I would say that was a year that was maybe not spent doing it as by the book as you would think for me. I mean, I played a lot of guitar. That was kind of a, you know, it wasn't an accredited school back when I went. It was just kind of a 12-month program that you go, and great experience because this is pre-internet. So you really only could put yourself against the people in your neighborhood as far as, you know, where your skill sets were and things like that. Like, so I only could compare myself to local guitar players and people that you'd actually buy their records and things like that. But those people didn't seem real, you know, they seem larger than life and like unattainable. So they almost don't factor in a way. So it was a good experience to go sit in the room like day one at MI, Musicians Institute, and GIT is, of course, the guitar area with that, and see 500 students sitting in the room from all over the world, everybody with their guitar, and go, well, this happens every 6 months. There's another group of 500 or whatever. So it was, you know, that was a cool moment and good, great life experience to move away from the suburbs of Chicago to Hollywood and live for, I ended up staying there another year working at a recording studio, but living there for a couple of years is a great experience as a kid. And yeah, I mean, I played a lot of guitar. It wasn't really a, like, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this kind of school. It was just kind of like, look, all this is going on, do whatever you want kind of thing for 12 months. So while I played a lot of guitar, it wasn't necessarily as driven by the school itself as you would think. It was just kind of a lot of me using the time to do so.
Well, it just sounds like you're very passionate about music, about guitar. And I think you need to be that way in order to be where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, I would describe it as love hate, you know. It's like there's moments where it's like, oh, like I gotta play again. I think that there's a famous Jimi Hendrix quote, I think, of sorts about that, like where what it's like to make a living playing guitar, where he said, man, there's gonna be times you hate your guitar, and like there are plenty of times where I'm like picking it up going, I don't wanna be doing this at all, but like it's, you know, it's, you end up with your hands on it. And then there are tons of times what tends to happen is it's more the initial moment. It's like pick it up. And then once it's in my hands, I kind of venture, my mind goes into like, I don't know, like a different, like my, it just changes mindset. Like once I'm playing, time kind of vanishes. And then I almost don't, it's hard to get it out of my hands in a sense too, because I'll be on it and going, well, maybe just a little more of this, maybe a little more of this, and maybe I'll do this. And so in particular, when I'm working on creative stuff, when I'm working on, you know, my original music, that happens, or working on an album in the studio, it can be ridiculous. Like I'll just, you know, keep going and keep going and keep going. And you almost need to like, be like, dude, you need to stop and like eat and like go to sleep. And yeah.
For sure. Now I'm assuming you have a home studio. Did you, well, I want to take it back to, you talked about playing all the time and you talked about a new album you have coming out. When you get inspired to write a song, do you like just stop what you're doing and go handle it and suss it out? Or like, how does that work for you? Because they say that you got to kind of act on it when it comes, because it can go away as quickly as it comes.
Yeah, the creative thing has always been the easiest and probably my strong suit as far as musicality goes. I feel like I'm able to just turn it on and off. So when I need to like write something, it always happens. I never have a moment where I'm like, I couldn't write anything. It like happens every time. So that's, I guess, a good thing. And, you know, if I'm understanding like what I'm writing for and like what I'm going for, and then you kind of realize like, all right, this is what it needs. So yeah, the creative end of things, I almost had to like ratchet it back from when I was younger. Because I think, you know, when I was doing the instrumental albums, when I started out just as Joel Hoekstra, not Joel Hoekstra's 13, which is my rock side project. The Joel Hoekstra albums were pretty creative and like, you know, instrumental. And so they were kind of, even to date, largely ignored by people, you know, that I get a lot more people interested in like the bands that I've been a part of and things like that than saying like, hey, I have your instrumental albums and, you know, this song was really cool or whatever. And so, you know, I almost had to kind of learn to guide myself more towards having more, I guess, relatability with people in terms of like music I was writing.
You just talked about relatability, and there's another trait that you have. We talked about your work ethic, Joel, which I think is second to none in terms of what you've done. And I think it's, you know, I've always believed that everything happens for a reason, but I think it's more likely to happen for a reason if you're working hard and working hard all the time. But there's another trait that you have that I think is far too rare these days, and it really comes through, and it's your humility. And for as talented as you are and for all that you've accomplished, and yes, I was joking in the beginning about your website, but there's not many people that could have all of that on their website. So where does that come from in terms of that trait that you have with regard to your humility?
Probably just how long it took things to open up for me. So, you know, I've always said the hardest thing with music is to just be a pro, be a professional. So like, you know, when I meet people that are in cover bands and tribute bands and things like that, and I try to explain to them, like, look, we're, you know, we're doing the same thing. It's like the difference being that, you know, maybe the size of the audience or something like that. But like, in terms of people out like playing gigs or any pro musician, that's the hardest thing to achieve, I think, in life, to be, because it takes a lot of guts to go for that, knowing like, boy, there's a good chance I'm going to be poor the rest of my life, or, you know, and be looked at as such in every social setting for the rest of your life. So there has to be like a leap of faith that happens there, and like a willingness to let that be the case, if so be, you know. It's like, all right, well, if that's the case and that's the way it works out, then fine. But I would, you know, it took a long time. It took a lot of me playing in different things, and I've always been making my living with guitar. There's people that think, because they heard of me fairly later, that think I did something else, and I never did anything else. I've been pretty much just doing guitar the entire time. It just was stuff that was off radar. Like when I talk about doing Love Janice, and that was a couple years. And then I did that show also in regional theaters, where I'd go around and sit down in a city for a month and a half and play that show. And then that director gave me another show called It Ain't Nothing But the Blues. And I was out doing that. So like a blues theater show. So like random stuff that people would be like, what? And during those, I was doing the fly dates with the Turtles. So I'd fly from whatever city I was in to go play with them, and or Big Brother and the Holding Company too, when I was playing with them during that time. So yeah, I just kind of, I guess how long it took things to open up for me and actually be recognizable, I guess, to people, or have anybody actually care. So that'll create humility in a hurry.
Well, I think some people just don't necessarily appreciate the amazing talent, you know, when it's an instrumental. For whatever reason, people like to hear vocals and whatnot. And sometimes you're right, things get glossed over, but the talent is still there. Joel, what are you most proud of?
Just that I've been able to make a living doing it this long, that get to this point in my life and be like, all right, this is what I set out to do when I was 11. And so that's like, you know, that kind of same thing about like, I want to be a baseball player or that kind of stuff, right? Where that kids say that, oh yeah, 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 sure. You know? So, I guess just getting this far.
Did you ever have a plan B? Cause it doesn't sound like you need it. I mean, obviously you didn't need one, but was there ever that thought of just kind of having something to fall back on? Cause it sounds like you just were focused and just did everything you could for plan A.
I didn't really. I had like a little bit of doubt in my younger 20s for a minute. And I was like, you know, maybe I should be like considering like, you know, going into marketing or something like that for business. And that thought entered my head because I was like, what am I going to do? Just be like, you know, totally poor and like broke and a loser the rest of my life. And so I kind of, you know, I just kind of had that little thought process that occurred, and you know, but it was quickly closed off by like momentum and enthusiasm for guitar.
I'd like to personally thank you for not having a plan B and for sticking with plan A, because I've enjoyed your plan A for a long time.
Oh, thank you.
Joel, last question for me. What was it like playing with Cher?
Great. I mean, that was something, like I mentioned earlier, that would be really unforeseen. I was definitely not 11 years old playing Black Sabbath songs going, someday I'm going to play with Cher, you know, but I think having the opportunity to do it ended up being a really awesome experience, playing with an iconic pop star like her, and being able to step out and, you know, go back to back with her during those songs, like Turn Back Time and stuff, were a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is. You're right. It's an iconic moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything, Joel, that you haven't done that you'd like to set out to do in terms of your musical career?
No, just kind of keep going on a daily basis. I don't think so much about the long term or those, like, you know, what the big goals are. It's just more like work hard at everything and see where things kind of lead. You get opportunities, and when you get those, you kind of throw yourself at them and see how it all pans out. But just kind of keep working at it to, you know, it's that's really what it's all about. It's more of the daily thing than thinking about like, I want to do this. So I just kind of keep going on a daily basis towards things that are productive and see where it all takes me. I let life kind of guide me in a way, more so than me saying like, this is where I'm going.
You know, I like that, because in a lot of ways you're saying, instead of saying, I want to do this, you're actually just doing.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah. Like, yeah, there's a lot of talk about like, you know, this is the way it's going to work out. And then when life throws you a curveball and it doesn't work out, that whole thing can shatter. So it can't really shatter like persistence and just kind of like, you know, the work ethic thing you mentioned, like if you're working on a daily basis and you're persistent, like things do work out. So that's very much at the end of the day, the story for me, more so than, you know, flash in the pan, like, you know, made it overnight and, you know, it wasn't that way for me at all. It took a long time and things just kind of gradually opened up and, you know, I have no complaints, you know, it's all good, man. You know, I was able to get to, you know, most guitar players would be lucky to have like a couple of these names on their resume, one or two. So for me to have been able to do all the bigger gigs that I've done is great.
Well, they say don't leave 5 seconds before the miracle and you haven't. And that's why all these great things keep happening. So congratulations on that. And we're excited. We hope to check out your new album whenever you decide to release that. Or you're just working on it right now. You don't have a date or anything, right?
No, just in the very early going with it, just writing it. But, you know, in 3 days, the new Revolution Saints album comes out, Against the Wind. So people can check that out online. That's kind of the stuff in the immediate future here, going to 2 rock and roll fantasy camps coming up in LA to consulate those. And I'll be on the Monsters of Rock cruise in March, and then, you know, be playing a lot with my friend Brandon Gibbs, acoustic duo gigs throughout the year. We'll be doing the US and touring the UK and possibly Japan in the fall. And I'll be touring with Accept, like I mentioned, filling in for their guitarist in South America and the European festival scene this summer, like so late spring into summer. So be working with them. And then of course, come November, December, I'll have Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So it'll be a really busy year. There's a lot happening this year.
Well, we'll look for you if you ever come to the Philadelphia area. We'll come and check
it out. We're at Wells Fargo every year.
It'll oh, wonderful.
Always at Wells Fargo every year with them. So at the very least that, yeah.
Okay, well, awesome.
At the very least, that's the big one.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Joel. You are a massive talent and you are so humble and your hard work has definitely paid off and it's given a lot of joy to a lot of people. So thank you for that. And folks, thank you for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed the show and we'll see you next week.
All right. Cheers. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
To you by Doherty & Company Insurance Services for all your business and personal insurance needs. Our friends at Tennis Addiction in Exton, PA. And the Mallon Agency, where exceeding expectations is how they do business.